I spoke at Westside last month. I picked that as one of my songs for to be sung. That indeed is a good song. It's good to be back again. It's always nice. Pulaski in the fall, that's pretty special, isn't it? Southwest Virginia in general. It's really, I hope we appreciate living here. I think you do. And it is good to be back. Short update. It's hard to remember from time to time when I'm just here every so often exactly what I've told you. But just a quick update. Kay is still sewing away. I'm driving her K-Quilts car, her little Honda HRV. It's got the K-Quilts license plate on it. And she has been quilting away recently. She has found a way to help kids at Carillion, and I'm not going into detail on that, but she can explain it to you. But she does the piecing of the tops and then takes them in to a quilt shop that she likes to use, and I think they make sure they get them finished up and get to the kids. But she can tell you more about that if you want to hear about it. But I think that has given her even more of a reason to quilt. So she's been spending a lot of time upstairs. And so that is just great. I'm still out a lot. Just get out, walk, hike. I like to try to get in a local hike about once a week. And then from time to time, you know, I was up in Shenandoah National Park here a while back. I don't know if I've been back here since we did that. Went up to Front Royal and did a hike up in S&P one day, just a one-day hike, and it was fun. And then on the way back, we stopped at the Virginia Quilt Museum. Does that surprise anybody? Did you know Virginia had a quilt museum? It's near Harrisonburg, JMU, little place. I think it's called Dayton is the name of the little town. But I let Kay go in there, and I just kind of sit around the car and chilled out. But it was great. Our two sons, Nathan and Ellen, and the four kids are in Belgium. He works at NATO. He's on job assignment for NATO. They kept their house in Alabama. They're renting it out. So that's where they plan on going back. I think this is a three-year assignment. They just had a bunch of Fried Hardeman kids over there. And I think Fried Hardeman has a Belgium program, as I understand. And I guess that's where those kids came from. I think he said it was about 25 of them. So they worship there where Nathan attends, small congregation, and I think one of the boys spoke. And then they had them over to their house. And so they treated them there at their house and had them. And I think the kids kind of played around out in the yard, some of them. And I just think of the impact that had on Nathan and Ellen's four kids, to be around those college kids who were focused on spiritual things. And they, I think they sang there at the house, you know, sang hymns and probably a lot of those youth songs. And so very special. Our oldest son, Aaron, he is the police sergeant in Memphis. And Mark, thank you for praying for the responders. Last time I talked to him, I think the National Guard had just moved into Memphis. It was about 2 weeks ago or so. And he did ask for prayers that for that situation, because it's really, you know, for the Memphis Police Department, you know, they're their own entity, and then have a group come in. I guess for the higher-ups in the police department, I don't think it affects Aaron that much this way. But, you know, they're probably like, well, do they think we can't do our job? So they're sending people in And apparently they weren't. And when you're in Memphis, Tennessee, it's probably hard to do your job with all the crime there. So hopefully, Aaron was just praying that you'd just remember the department as there's so much going on, so much, I guess you'd say, turmoil, uncertainty with the guard being there. And hopefully in the end it will help. My understanding, what I've read, is it helped up in Washington, D.C. It did make it better there. So I hope the same thing will happen in Memphis, because it can sure use it. I can tell you, it can sure use it. But it is great to be back with you guys. What I'm going to do on Bible class, and I'm going to time you here. I'm going to set my timer on. And when I say go, and I'll count off 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, see how long it takes you. Now, I know some of you may be on phones, but if you got your Bible, how long will it take you to find the book of Ruth? Go. Five seconds. 10 seconds. 15 seconds. 20 seconds. I'm not going to put the pressure on you anymore. The point is, you know, there's little old tiny Ruth. It's kind of tucked in the pages between Judges and 1 Samuel. And if I was looking forward, if I wasn't teaching the class, it might have taken me as long too. But it's almost hiding in there. You know, little old tiny book, 4 chapters, 85 verses, so small that you might flip right through it. And that's what we're going to talk about today. And I think what I'm going to do, when I get to my end point today, I'm just going to try to mark it or put a note, sticky note, whatever, got through such and such, pick up at such and such. And when I come back, I'm not going to say if, when I come back, I can just kind of pick up there. Maybe just do a very brief, okay, here's what we did before, here's where we are. I'm not going to go back and cover everything. But just kind of pick up there, and as I come back from time to time, just keep going through Ruth. That's the plan. Now, let me say this. Suppose Eddie wants to do a study of Ruth. That's perfectly fine. I can do something else the next time I come. I can do another study. But otherwise, I think I'm just going to start going through the book of Ruth. Now, let's do this. Let's read verse 1 and 2. Let me read that right now. And this will introduce us to the one of the main characters. Now, there's going to be, I think, 4 names mentioned here. And one of them is the main character. Ruth 1, verse number 1. Now, it came about in the days of the judges, when the judges governed, that there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the land of Moab with his wife and 2 sons. Okay, that's setting up what is about to happen here. Verse 2, the man, name of the man was Elimelech. The name of his wife, Naomi. Main character number 1, Naomi. And the names of his 2 sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem in Judah. Now they entered the land of Moab and remained there. So it mentions the dad, Elimelech, or husband, and the 2 sons, Mahlon and Chilion. They're not main characters, but we'll find out a little bit about them as we begin. But Naomi stays a main character throughout the book. Reading the book of Ruth is like walking along the seashore and finding a precious gem among the numerous shells that blanket the sand there. You don't know what you've gotten until you pick it up, examine it, look at it, maybe hold it up in the sunlight and see its beauty glimmering, and then only do you realize, wow, this is a gem I've got in my hand. That's kind of what the Book of Ruth is. It's a gentle and vibrant love story. Do you like love stories? Now, I got to admit, I watch those Hallmark movies with Kay. We watch them from time to time. And, you know, it's kind of like the same routine every time. You know, the young girl, the young guy, and she already has a boyfriend. Well, that poor boyfriend at the beginning of the story, you almost know he's going to get booted out and she's going to fall for this other guy. But Kay and I will watch those stories. There's something about a love story, you know. This story is full of love and romance, as well as tragedy and triumph. So it's a pretty cool story. Full of love lost and love found. Its form, the form of Ruth, just reading it, it's almost like a modern short story in form. Maybe best of all, and I'm giving it away right now, it has a happy ending. And that's one of the things about those Hallmark stories, is that they generally have a happy ending. I think we like that. Ruth shows how even in the deepest grief and despair, it can eventually lead to joy, happiness, fulfillment. If I were to ask people sitting here today, I expect there's a good chance that one or more of you heard these words at your wedding or the wedding of a child or grandchild or at the wedding of a friend. Entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. That's Ruth 1, verse number 16. Now, I'm guessing that was familiar to a lot of you, if not all of you. You know, the journey through life is not always smooth. It's not always easy. You know that. You have dealt with that. It's a challenge to always know which way to go at times. How do I move on from here? And then, in some cases, if we feel lost and uncertain, how do we find our way back? Fortunately, we have a roadmap to show us the right path. We have a roadmap. The roadmap is God's Word, our Bible. This book is filled with truths and treasures that are beneficial to anyone who's willing to dig deep enough to find them. And folks, Ruth is filled with these treasures. Yes, it is. The story happened in the days of the judges. That's in verse 1, when the judges govern. F. Lagard Smith puts Ruth squarely into the book of Judges between chapter 12 and chapter 13. Now, I don't know if we can prove that. He must have had, if not biblical reasoning, historical reasoning, maybe to say that. And again, that's his thought on it. I don't know that we can prove that or not. But anyway, during the book of Judges, it tells us that in verse 1. In the Jewish Bible, it's part of the five books of the Megillah. Megillah. Megillot. That is Ruth, Lamentations, Esther, Solomon, Ecclesiastes. The five books of the Megillah in the Jewish Bible. Probably because of the reference to harvest in the book of Ruth, this book was read at Pentecost, the book of Ruth. One of the themes of the book of Ruth is the interest in and importance of non-Jews. Ruth was from the land of Moab. The Moabites lived to the east of the Dead Sea. They were traditional enemies of Israel. The Moabites were. The Moabites descended from Lot. Yes, Lot. That's where they came from. They refused, do you remember? They refused Israel passage when the Israelites were going to the Promised Land. They refused them passage through their land. Now, I think that's going to come back to bite them later on. That wasn't a smart move. Their king, talking about the Moabites now, Balak, tried to hire who? Balaam to curse Israel. Remember that story? It's a good story. And again, when I say story, some people I know prefer to use account. I'm okay with either word. And I'll probably say story most of the time. But if you want to say the account of, that's fine. David would later defeat the Moabites and treat them harshly in fulfillment of Balaam's prophecy. That prophecy is in Numbers 24, verse number 17. And I won't read all these verses that I mentioned, but some of you may take notes and like to write down the verse numbers. And so a lot of times I will give you the verse number. Won't necessarily read it every time. Ruth was honored to be one of five women listed where? It's an important listing. Yes, genealogy of Christ. So there was, and I'm going to say them slowly and let you try to pick up in your mind who the others are. I won't do a countdown on this one. I'll just say it slowly. Okay, you got Ruth. You got Tamar. You've got Rahab. You've got her that had been the wife of Uriah. I think that's the way it says it, if I'm not mistaken. Who was that? Bathsheba. I don't know this for sure, but do you reckon they did that on purpose, the writers or the spirit or however was given, you know, the original Greek and that it mentioned Uriah instead of Bathsheba? That may have been done on purpose. If it was, I'm kind of glad it was, honestly. And then the last one in that, Jesus' mom, Mary. Okay, those are five women listed in the genealogy of Christ. Isn't that nice? Man, everything I read about Mary, she must have been a good lady. I mean, I think, and you may have heard lessons before just on her. But I think she was some kind of lady. I mean, I don't picture her being a power woman or some outgoing, loud woman. But I think she was just the kind of mom that Jesus needed, that she could deal with it. How many ladies could deal with what was going on when that angel appeared to her? But she seemed to be able to deal with it. And I'm not saying it was easy on her, but I think she was a good lady. This book, the study of this book, will give us an interesting glimpse into the lives of some main characters. I mentioned one already, Naomi, Ruth, Boaz. I would call those the main characters in this book. Now, I want you to imagine something. Imagine what it would be like if the city in which you lived, the city in which you worked, that's where your job was experiencing a major crisis. We really can't relate to this that much. Now, there may be people in other countries that can, maybe our own brethren in other countries that can. No jobs, no money. No food. Food's running out. No relief in sight. And I mention this because this is kind of how it was for this family, the Elimelech family, at this time. Well, you start looking to move to another city only to discover that the whole country's in the same dilemma. There's not much place you can turn to. Then you hear of another country where apparently they have food. Maybe it's plentiful. There must be opportunities there. Maybe you can find work and earn some income. I mean, you've got two kids. You need some income. And really, it's not that far away, this other country. There is one problem with that other country. You know what it is? The people that live there, they are idol worshipers that live in that other country. They're not worshipers of Yahweh. They're worshipers of their own god or gods. Do you go? Do you go, dads, husbands, granddads? Do you go there? I mean, after all, I have a wife, two kids to feed. Things are really bad here where we're living. I know the environment won't be good there, but surely our faith is strong enough that we won't compromise. This is the type of decision that Elimelech was faced with in chapter 1. Now, let's see where we are historically as we look at this background. I think this will help us as we start this background information, start going through these verses. It's the time of the judges. A volatile period of history in Israel. Remember, the Israelites had been in Egypt 400 or 400 some years. And I think a lot of those years they had been slaves. They had become slaves after Joseph, and I guess maybe his memory, if you will, his influence after it kind of faded. They end up becoming slaves. Then when they leave Egypt with Moses as their leader, they wander 40 years. In the wilderness. Now, this is that same people now during the period of the judges. They had finally settled into that land. That's the land that Abraham had been promised centuries before. I think back in Genesis 12 was when Abraham was promised. Maybe more than one time he was promised that. But Genesis 12 comes to mind, and then his son was promised that, then his grandson, you know, Isaac, Jacob. Jacob, it became Israel, right? So when I say Jacob, we're talking about Israel. That's what his name became. I think I got those names right. It could have been a great time of peace and prosperity. Now, once they got into the land, as long as Joshua was around, I think things were going pretty good. And then Joshua dies out, and I guess his influence starts to die out. And there the Israelites go, impacted by the Canaanites that were left over. I don't think they got them all driven out, influenced by the Canaanites. Why couldn't the Israelites have influenced the Canaanites and led them to the true God? I'm not sure I really get that. There's probably a reason that I'm not thinking about, but what were the Israelites? Are you telling me the Canaanites had stronger convictions than the Israelites? That's a study to do sometime. But why couldn't the Israelites just consume them, if you will, in the religion of Israel, the religion of the gods? I mean, they were such a bad end. I guess what the Canaanites were doing was visually appealing, and in terms of the world. Is it not the same kind of today? I guess we could think, how come the church today can't bring in the world to God? Well, there's so much stuff out there that's appealing to so many people. How many people do you and I know that have been a part of the church or are no longer part of it? They're out in the world now. But I'm getting off on a topic I didn't mean to get into. Stop, time out. You know, what did they, if the Israelites at this time, if they had obeyed God, driven out all the inhabitants, I think they would have been living a good life. They've got land, they've got territory. I think it could have been good for them. They were living the promise of hundreds of years ago. They were living it now. They were there. And what were they told? I told you to make no covenant with them. I told you to tear down their altars, but you have not obeyed. They shall be thorns in your sides, and their gods, little g, shall be a snare to you. And boy, were they ever. And that little quote, or those thoughts are from Judges 2. So, you know, they're being warned there in the first part of Judges. Well, they had been warned, I think, before that too. I think they kept warning. I think Moses had a big speech before he died and they went into the land, telling them, kind of laying it out on the line, but there they go. So sure enough, God's people are enticed to worship other gods, the Canaanite gods, turning their backs on the one who had delivered them through all those years in the wilderness, had brought them into the land, who had helped them acquire the land. Well, eventually, God turned His back on them. He just kind of had enough. Now, He was long-suffering. You remember one point, I think it was back in the wilderness, God was about ready just, I think, to wipe them out. And Moses pleaded with him, please don't do this. Don't wipe this nation out. I think God was so fed up with him. I think he was going to spare Moses. And it's what he, don't do that, God. So I guess God respected Moses enough that he didn't do that. You know, if you do that and the Egyptians hear about it, and, you know, so then they'll say, well, they couldn't, the God couldn't even bring them out. So, you know, Moses really tried to kind of reason with God, if you will. But God spared him. But here they go. So eventually God turns his back on it, basically, allowing them to suffer oppression from these pagans. The people would cry for deliverance. Oh, it has gotten so bad. It has gotten so bad. God would raise up a judge. Now, this was after Joshua. While Joshua was there, they seemed to kind of do what they were supposed to. But this is after Joshua's death. So God raises up a judge to deliver them. There'd be peace in the land for a while. You probably know this. You probably heard it before. But it really applies as part of the background for Ruth, I think. When the judge died, guess what? What happened? Yeah, I think you know. They went right back again. They would give in again. So it was like a cycle of rebellion, repentance, restoration, rest for a while, then more rebellion. It's like a spiritual roller coaster. If you could have charted that thing, it had just been like this, I guess. It was during this turbulent time that Elimelech and Naomi lived. Okay? Lived with her two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. And I wonder, you know, that famine, I wonder if that was one, very well, that could have been one of God's judgments against the Israelites, that famine that was going on right then. I think he used famines a lot to punish the Israelites. That was one of his ways. So the Judah's in the midst of this severe famine. Ironically, Bethlehem means house of bread. Bethlehem, where they are. For Elimelech, it had become a house of blight. All right, that's some background. So for Elimelech, it's decision time. Decision time. Do we stay in Judah, risk starvation? We don't know what's going to happen. Or do we venture to another land and establish a new home? And he's got those two boys, remember, to think about. I don't know what all went into this decision in the society in which they lived at that time. I don't know how much input the wife would have had, in this case, Naomi. I don't know how much input she would have had. I don't know if they had a family meeting and laid everything out. I don't know if Elimelech prayed earnestly about this. Don't know for sure, you know, his spiritual leadership. Was he a strong man spiritually? Not sure. In the end, we do know that Elimelech's family left for Moab. Maybe having those two boys to feed was the determining factor. I don't want to see my family starve to death. And it looks like that's where we're heading. Maybe that was his reasoning. Maybe they concluded drastic times call for drastic efforts or drastic actions. Let me go back and read 1 and 2 again. Now, it came about in the days when the judges governed. There was a famine in the land. Certain man of Bethlehem in Judea went to sojourn in the land of Moab with his wife, two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech. The wife is Naomi. Two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem in Judah. They entered the land of Moab and remained there. Now, I will say this, if you read some commentators on this, I think you're going to see that one or more labels this move as unjustified. He should not have done this. And there's probably more than one. I've got Matthew Henry as one of the commentators who says that was unjustified for him to move like that. And I will recall, and I'm going to read this to you, and then I'll tell you where it is. Just listen to it. It's in another Old Testament book, but just listen. "An Amorite or Moabite shall not enter the assembly of the Lord, even to the tenth generation. None of his descendants shall enter the assembly of the Lord forever." Does that sound like where you want to move to? "Because they did not meet you with bread and water on the road when you came out of Egypt. And because they hired against you Balaam, the son of Beor, from Pethor of Mesopotamia to curse you. Nevertheless, the Lord your God would not listen to Balaam, but the Lord your God turned the curse into a blessing for you, because the Lord your God loves you. You shall not seek their prosperity all your days forever." Does that sound like a place you need to be moving to? And by the way, if you take down notes or verses, that is Deuteronomy 23, verse number 3-6. In Genesis chapter 26, there was a famine in the land. Now, we're backtracking for a purpose here. There's a famine in the land. God appears to Isaac. You know what he tells him? Now, there's another famine. Seemed like it was a lot of famines, wouldn't it? I think that was God, one of God's ways of punishing the Israelites. God tells Isaac not to go down into Egypt. "Dwell in this land, and I will be with you and bless you." Isaac listened. Now that was Genesis 26, verse number 3. You know what? God wanted his people to trust in him for his needs. Same thing today. Elimelech appears to have taken matters into his own hands. If it is okay, this is a good stop point for me. If it's about time, this is a good stop point in this. And picking up next time, and I'll try to make sure I get this marked or a note some way that this is where we left off. Thank you for your good attention. Appreciate it.